Hey folks, you're listening to a special 9-part series on gender, gender politics, and gender equality. Obviously, you can do what you'd like in terms of how you listen to them, but I've designed these to be listened to in order. Each episode builds on the last one in a logical way. Think of it like you'd think of a book. If you take things out of order, a lot of it is going to be hard to understand or just seem off. So if you've just stumbled into this episode, please go back to the start. Otherwise, thanks for listening to everything in order. Let's get into it. Welcome back, gang. Today, we're going to solve the pay gap. Yay! We're going to explore what it actually is, and conveniently, that's also going to show us how to solve it. But perhaps before we get into it, let's just explore the current landscape a little bit. What do you think is the common understanding at the moment of the pay gap? Like, what do you think the general understanding is of what the pay gap is?
As in that women don't get paid enough because men get to, like, get all the money? That is that general understanding?
That kind of thing, yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, we actually have that as one of the year 10 questions that they have to do a speech on, is the gender pay gap, and it's all that. Although, interestingly, there are quite a few of the young males who go, no, we don't get paid enough.
Interesting.
Mm.
Awesome. Cool. Inga, any change or advancement on that?
I'm a little bit ahead of the game on this side of things because I've been exposed to both from a union and a corporate perspective, reports on the gender pay gap and what that might actually mean in exploring things like gender equity in numbers at the different levels of an organization and how that actually influences some of that stuff. So yeah, I'm probably a bit ahead of the game on this one.
Can you transpose yourself into the feet of a regular, normal, mainstream consumer of media and say, what do you think the general understanding is of the pay gap?
So when I first started looking at this, it felt like, and actually in some instances it actually was, it's matured a bit, but it was when a man and a woman could be doing the same job and being paid differently. So a man would actually be paid more for the same job, the same position as a woman.
Beautiful. My take, before having jumped into the research in detail, my assumption, like the generally commonly held number at the moment, is about a 17% difference, I think is what most people talk to. Like, I know, for instance, there's a coffee shop down on Sydney Road that charges a 17% tariff on top if you are male presenting as a way of equalising. So I think that's probably a decent representation of the general understanding. And Inga, you also touched on representation a little bit because these topics are kind of related. So what's our, just briefly, what's our take on the representation of women in workplace and perhaps also like public roles and politics and so forth? You reckon that's about even, or you reckon most people are under the impression that women are underrepresented?
So it depends on what layer you're talking about. So generally speaking, from things that I've seen in, and again, this is actually across different kind of corporate organisations, is that women are overrepresented in part-time and lower level positions. And as you go higher up the hierarchy, it swaps, and then you get a higher male representation the higher up you go and in full-time positions.
Yeah, right, cool. Emma, what do you reckon the general take is on representation?
Similar to what Inga had just said, and I don't really claim to know what general public think because I try not to hang out with them. No, that's not true. Very broadly, it seems to me people go, oh, there's just not enough women getting enough pay in enough.
Beautiful. Positions. Yep, yeah. Lock it in. And I don't mean that that's a beautiful thing. I mean, You've summarized it beautifully. Yes. okay, so yeah, no question. Women as a group are paid less. So that's going to be our topic number one for today. And women are underrepresented in the workplace. So that's going to be our topic number two. broad gross generalization, Inga. Let's get into it.
No, I totally, that's absolutely fine. I like starting with broad generalizations. Let's start from there.
Okay, so topic number one, women are underpaid. So yeah, it's pretty easy to find media out there about that 17% figure I was talking about. And that seems to be easily demonstrated in data, unless they don't have kids.
Through that.
So the thing about this, which is extraordinary, is that there is no pay gap, or almost no pay gap, or a pay gap that goes in the other direction for women that don't have kids. So it's almost kind of like the problem isn't actually patriarchy, it's kids. Cute little babies were the problem all along. They were the original misogynists and the original oppressors.
Said that for a very long time.
So yeah, it's possible it's not so that women are paid less. It's possibly not the patriarchy devaluing women or women's work. But obviously there is a massively gendered problem going on here that needs to be addressed because obviously, well, most of the time men aren't the ones that give birth. So let's burrow down into that a little bit because that just absolutely blew my mind when I discovered that. It's so contrary. I mean, you hear women debating, oh, I feel like it's a bit of a choice between kids and career. But I had never really thought that it would be so substantial. Yeah, so why are women underpaid? The basic measure around this, which has been repeated just many, many, many times, is there's a whole bunch of, you can start measuring the rates of pay that women are offered outside of straight out of high school or university and compare them to men. And there's no pay gap there, or if anything, a slight positive in favor of women. And then you can keep on measuring that as time goes by. And if a woman doesn't have kids, the drop never comes. There is actually equality there. But the moment she has kids, yeah, it kicks in. So yeah, listeners, put the kids in expensive childcare, grab a cuppa and grab your most recent payslip, and let's get into it a bit. So what happens when she or when a person gives birth is obviously she loses her career and income and experience. And right at the same time, where if it's a heterosexual relationship, and I'm so sorry about the generalizations, but if it's a hetero relationship, he is gonna ramp up his efforts in the workplace. So they're both, as a couple, gonna go, right, shit's about to get real. We need to get really serious on this. And they do everything around, like, setting up life for kids and nurseries and everything else. And he starts to go, right, my role in this is to earn as much money as hard as I possibly can. So right at the time where she drops out of the system, he becomes more committed. She will almost never recover. It's quite rare. And yeah, that's in contrast to if a woman doesn't have kids in her life, then right at the end or at retirement age or at the end of her career, men and women are about the same. So same total income, same superannuation, same property ownership, etc. It's almost like we already live in a gender equality world. A little like side story from here is the interesting question of why this is so underreported. Because yeah, I'm kind of I have some frustration that when we talk about, say, that 17% figure, it's almost always spoken about as an intentional devaluing of women or women's work or the work that women do, which just makes you furious. And yeah, anyway, when it's portrayed in a way that's intentional, that's whipping us to a frenzy that we may not need to be in.
At one point in time, and I've seen evidence to back this up, at one point in time, women were actually paid differently than men for the same role, regardless of whether they had kids or not. So
Yes.
I know a lot of organizations have come some ways in that, and just for something different, our media hasn't caught up on
Right.
that.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's definitely somewhere that we've come from, and that's why it's really hard to shift that narrative,
Yeah.
I think, or one of the reasons.
Agreed. So yeah, historically, it not only was there a structural trend there was outright stated rates
Bias.
of pay. Yeah.
Yeah,
Do we
absolutely.
know how far in history that is? Because I feel like that's a recentish kind of thing where someone can be paid 60 grand if you're a male to do this job and 43 grand or whatever if you're a female to do this job. So I'm just wondering how long ago this is, or how recent history this is, because I feel like that would make a big impact on the way that people relate to the whole topic. You
Yeah.
know, like the stats that you're talking about, you know, like I don't have kids, but I also don't have a really high paying job. So I'm sort of like, well, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. But ChatGPT does. And in Australia, it was mostly 1969 with some follow-up legislation in 1972. And for most developed economies, it was throughout that decade of the 1970s.
But I think there's I think there's more juice in that comparison. Sorry, how to say this? Hang on, let me. I'll just say this next point, and let's like circle back to your question. So if we imagine a situation where, say, we're comparing a man and a woman in the same sector, or same approximate job, and at about age 30, she drops out to have kids, and she's out of the workforce for about 10 years, give or take. When you jump ahead to when they're both age 40, he's been in the same sector for about 20 years solid. She's had literally exactly half the amount of experience, and it was 10 years ago. So, one of the things to your point, Emma, around this comparison of like work, often we'll say people in the same role or the same job, but there's an incredible difference between someone that's been in the same job for 20 years solid and someone that's had a 10-year break. So it's horrible, but that's, I think a lot of the time we talk about that like it's the same work, and it's not. Also, yeah, I think you mentioned, or someone mentioned about part-time work. So what she tends to do is when she comes back looking for work, she's only going to be looking for part-time work. She's only available for part-time work because she's still got school obligations and everything else. And from an employer perspective, part-time work is far less valuable than full-time work. Like if you've got like two 20-hour a week jobs compared to a 40-hour a week, the sum of the two 20-hour jobs is way more expensive on you as an employer than the other one. So there's more recruitment, more training, more management, more admin, more systems, more equipment, and also the staff themselves progress at about half the pace. They learn about the organisation at about half the pace. She's also going to want flexibility, so the ability to, disappear from the job with very little notice. So yeah, what you wind up with is a sort of a bidding war on anything that looks like flexible part-time work. And so over time, as an employer, if you put a job out like that and you get a flood of inquiries, next time you advertise that job, you're going to do it a little bit cheaper because you realize that that's what the market will allow, that's what the market will bear. At the same time, in the meanwhile, if we're still talking about that same heterosexual couple, the male partner will be absolutely going at it. That's going to be his contribution to the family. So yeah, she's going to be looking for a sort of an easier, calmer escape from parenting. She's going to be looking for a role that can cope with interruptions and sick kids. And he, meanwhile, is going to be trying hard to climb the ladder. There's a few other quirky, interesting, non-family reasons. Any thoughts or questions, or shall I keep going?
Keep going for the
Actually,
moment. I
the
have some
best.
stuff to add, but I
Okay.
don't know when. So,
Okay,
yep.
sweet. Big pause coming up. There's a few other reasons that are sort of non-family related. One of them is average number of hours worked, or rather amount of overtime hours worked in what is otherwise the same job. So that commonly quoted figure of a 17% wage gap, it actually freakishly happens to be really close to the difference between who does what overtime. So men work more overtime than women do, in short. Looking at more recent figures on that, the gap is not quite so dramatic, but I saw really solid research on this in Australia about a decade ago. And for a job that is in theory 38 hours a week, so a full-time job, women were on average working 40 hours, men were on average working 50 hours. Which is a huge difference from an employer's perspective, even if it looks like the same role. So that's another thing that feeds into this idea that if you just compare what men and women are getting paid, that nuance is hidden. And it's the same reason as before. He's likely to be gunning for it and wanting to lever everything he can. She's likely to be having work-life balance decisions going on. And even without the kid element in play, women are more likely to have that work balance in place. They're more likely to value part-time work, more likely to be seeking relaxed, chilled jobs, not across the board, but there's a little bit of a trend there. And this is now totally venturing totally into Rog theory. I don't have any data to back this up, but I reckon a bit of the glass ceiling is actually that women are not as stupid as men when it comes to throwing themselves into the workplace. Like, I think starting from the 70s, women perhaps thought that the workplace was a bit of a, maybe it was a little bit rose-coloured. Maybe there was a bit of like, gee, we're going to love it when we're in the workplace. And having actually gotten in there, women have realised something that I think men have been a bit slower to realise, which is that work sucks. Like, a lot of the time, it's a challenge. And so I think a bit of that work-life balance stuff is, I don't know, women having better values around life.
Interesting.
That's, as I say, it's just a Rogy theory. There's the wage gap, which we're talking about. There's also the death and danger gap. So male roles are much more likely to involve being killed on the job or being injured on the job. The numbers are actually of the people that die in Australia in the job. Actually, I'm not going to make that comparison. It's useless. I'll edit that out. In general, men are more likely to risk themselves, which sort of ties back to toxic masculinity that we've discussed and less value on self. It's not just men being irresponsible, although that might be a factor. But, yeah, there's a death and danger gap. So in some ways this is a choice between do you want a safer but less well-paid job, or do you want a more dangerous, probably more likely to be outside, possibly also less rewarding and less fulfilling kind of a job? And if so, what price are you going to put on that? There's one example that really illustrates all of this, which is Uber have male and female drivers, and I assume people that identify as neither of those, and they did a really thorough analysis of their data because their algorithm as to who gets offered what jobs has no capacity to pick between gender or anything else. Like, it's a completely neutral algorithm as to who gets offered things. And so they did an analysis confident that they were going to find that there was no gender gap. How could there possibly be in an invisible situation like that? And so they were a bit shocked to discover that they had in total, and I'm working from memory, but I'm pretty sure this is quite accurate, a 7% wage gap, despite the fact that there's no possible way that there could be a wage gap in their system. And so what they found when they looked into that was three things. One is the times of day that women were likely to work was different to when men were likely to work. So again, that's possibly a child influence, a family influence, patterning that. There's also risk of location or risk of work. Men were happier to go in riskier locations. And that just sucks. I'm so sorry. And then the last factor was speed. So men drive faster.
Unless they're me.
Yeah, it's quite funny because you and I know that you drive a lot faster than I do. But yeah. Anyway, it's not about us.
In my very vast experience catching Ubers, and I've been doing it for a very long time, and I do it quite often, and not as much these days, but I definitely have in the past, I can count on one hand the number of women drivers I've had. Mm-hmm. If we look at deliveries, even Uber deliveries, it's probably more two hands, but again, the number of female Uber deliveries, female-driven Uber deliveries that I've had is still under 10, and I order a lot. So, yeah, it's I have, and the ones I've spoken to, particularly the Uber drivers, when they're women Uber drivers, they definitely don't drive at night. I've actually found that propensity is a bit similar with older men as well. They tend to not drive at night for the same reasons. So I'm not surprised that there is a gap at all. In fact, I would have been surprised if there wasn't. But yes, I'm also not surprised about the speed ones. I get incredibly motion sick quite often from my Uber drivers.
And it's an interesting example in that one, because when I was talking about the safety gap before, that's more likely to be men dying on construction sites and machinery injuries and stuff like that. Whereas what we're talking about here with Uber drivers is fear of attack from passengers or something like that.
It's also emotional safety, not just the physical, but also getting hit on by passengers and stuff like that as well, goes up like that. The propensity for that to happen goes up when people are drinking. So if you can avoid those times, it's actually a lot easier.
So it's structural and it's gender-based and it's fucked, but it's not an intentional devaluing by the patriarchy. But we still need to do something about it. But yeah. So if you imagine you're an employer and you've got people doing the same role, and like one of them is part-time and feels less committed, takes more days off and sort of works the minimum hours and has less experience, and the other is full-time and then some, and is showing enthusiasm for climbing up the ladder and is more committed and has more experience in the area. I hate this, but a wage gap is inevitable. At the same time, I also hate it when that's described as the same work, because it's really not fair. Yeah,
And
they're not
it's funny
actually the
you say
same
that, right?
people.
No, but it's funny you say that because all of the part-time people that I've come across all work more than their hours, are really dedicated, try to keep up as much as they can, and get disadvantaged because there is that assumption that they will drop things and that they're not across things and they're not committed and they don't want to go anywhere. So how much of this is actually unconscious bias? In some places, like I'm sure it's also true for at least some of the people, but that expectation that that's going to be the case without, actually committing to somebody, doesn't help the cause either. Because why would you go part-time and be committed if your employer is not committed to you? And that's what we get when you pay someone less because they are part-time equivalent, then you're devaluing them as well. So why would they value you more if you value them less?
It's true. It's like there's an issue with part-time workers, and if it just so happens that women are more likely to be part-time workers, it's going to look like there's an issue with women, which may or may not be true. But I'm in the same boat. I am pretty much your archetypical woman in a lot of ways.
And I am the
In
opposite. So,
yeah, yeah, in that. Like, I've had chronic fatigue since I was in my 20s, and I haven't been able to work in a full-time job basically ever since. It's also, I don't know at what point in time that became my choice rather than something that happened to me. But and that, along with finding solutions to what was my depression and my activism, sort of taught me the value of following my heart, not my wallet. But at the same time, I don't have kids, and also there's a real normalisation around men in business, which I fit into. So I've got votes in both directions. But yeah, I've certainly experienced that part-time disrespect and lower pay.
Yes. Yeah. It's weird.
It's not like they usher me through saying, "Oh, we don't normally like part-time workers, but because you're male presenting, we'll pay you more."
Yeah, I don't know. Weird.
No, I was going to say they might not say that out loud.
No, yeah, I guess that's the point, isn't it? Yeah, if there's truth that there's a some form of conspiracy-like activity at play, it wouldn't be said out loud.
Compounding.
Couple of other further thoughts. There are obviously clearly some gendered patterns around that need to be addressed. But there is, yeah, one further thought on the idea: if it was possible to pay women less for the same work, ironically, it'd be the patriarchy that would keep that in check, because patriarchs, those at the peak of the pyramid, they care about profit more than anything else. Like, nothing is more important to them than capitalism and profit. And if it was possible to pay women less for the same work, those business systems would notice, and it would be, and we would see it show up in unemployment figures. So if you're an employer, even if you've got a bit of a distaste based on gender, if there's even a 1% saving in it for you in terms of the wages you pay, you are going to go with that over everything else.
Oh, meaning, you know, people would be hunting to have more female workers because they could allegedly pay them less and therefore they'd be saving money.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Even a 1% difference, let alone a 17% difference, but a 1% difference is enough to completely restructure a company, move it to a different country, change everything about it, onboard, outsource. So yeah, ironically, it'd be patriarchy in business that'd be keeping it in check. And if that wasn't the case, or if that mechanism was happening, we'd see it in unemployment figures, in that unemployment figures for women would be lower than men if we were paying them less. Because they'd be much more attractive. No, they're the same.
Well, that's good at least, I guess.
yeah. I've got great news. If you've made it this far through the series, there's obviously something about it that's striking a chord for you or is interesting in some way, even if you're disagreeing with parts of it. I know from people I've been speaking to that many folks are inspired to the point where you're wanting to get involved on some level, and this is where the great news comes in. Getting involved, or even just contributing and helping out, is really easy. All you've got to do is hit the share button, and half a minute later, you'll have done your bit. When it comes to the gender equality movements, all of us have spoken about parts of it with others in the past, sometimes with much passion. All of us know someone who's been thinking about this stuff but has struggled to find the language or the permission or whatever to take their thinking further. Many of us know people who are struggling with some aspect of the topics we've been discussing. These are the people you might want to share an episode with. And, just like that, you've done something for me, something for the person you shared with, and something for the world. Good job you for getting all pan-political and stuff. Yeah, does that make sense?
Yeah, as much as the crazy world makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, as in, it stacks up. I would probably say, you know, yeah, like it doesn't make sense at all because the world's crazy, but other than that, putting that aside, then sure.
Some of the thoughts I have around some of this stuff are around the jobs that are more traditionally women do get paid less than the jobs that are more traditionally men. So things yes. like, you know, childcare and HR, human resources type roles.
Nursing and teaching.
Nursing and teaching compared to, you know, tech and corporate, you know, yep. banking, etc., tend to be higher paid. So,
and why is that? Like, who sets those rates? Do you think it's patriarchy pulling the strings? Because what I want to put to you is, or what I'm trying to say here is that generally speaking, those roles that you've just described, like I absolutely, without a question, I agree with the generalization you've just made. Something like IT gets paid more than something like nursing. One of those jobs is more rewarding than the other. Like it's got the human element. It's got the sense that you are doing something for the world and you there is a direct cycle of appreciation. So people will naturally gravitate towards roles that feel better or that are more ethical or that allow them more freedom or something like that. And teaching is a beautiful example because it happens to perfectly match the hours that a relatively young mum is available. So what you get effectively is a bidding war. Every time you advertise a job in IT, you've got to start reaching overseas because those jobs are horrible. And sorry, that's a bit judgy of me because I personally wouldn't like them. But a lot of people do not like those jobs. They're really difficult, challenging, confronting, hyperwork environments. And you compare it to jobs that are more rewarding or more ethical or more flexible. And what you get is every time you advertise one of the less enjoyable jobs, you've got one or two applicants, but you get 10 or 20 for the more enjoyable, flexible roles. So effectively, you've got a bidding war. And over the course of time, market forces mean that those jobs that are less rewarding or less safe or less flexible, you wind up having to pay higher and higher and higher rates. It's not,
which also falls over though, because at the moment there aren't enough teachers and they're struggling monstrously to get enough teachers because it's not enjoyable. It's being insulted every day. It's getting kind of dangerous and it's frustrating and the rewards are not there.
And what are we seeing in response to that, to wages, to teachers' wages? They're on their way back up again, right?
No, they're doing Band-Aid. I mean, it's maybe more of an anomaly than you need to worry about in this search circumstance, but it's Band-Aid material. Like they're paying CRTs and so on extra money to go what I call danger schools and so on. And like I'm getting danger money to go to schools because people don't want to teach there because it's not rewarding and it's dangerous and it's stressful and it's not fun.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing as an outsider observer is that there's a lot of complaints of saying we need more money to pay teachers properly. We can't afford them at this rate. The work is not worth it.
That's right. Yeah.
So I think that's where we see that upward market forces response.
Yeah, although, certainly the flexibility and so on is not enough to be enough of a draw card. So even though it's the right time sort of frames, a lot of, well, and actually a lot of the women who are at the schools that I'm at are going, you know, there's some there who are going, oh, I only work 2 days a week because I've got kids and it's too draining to do the rest of it, et cetera, you know. But, I mean, all of that's probably a little bit too sideways from your topic, except that, you know, your example was teaching and it's like, that one doesn't count.
I reckon those market forces take decades to play out. So if there's a deficit at the moment, which clearly there is because the balance of what's being offered to you is not there for you, I'm talking about teachers generally perhaps rather than you specifically, then, over the course of time, that's going to result in an upward pressure on wages.
Yeah, and I mean that's also happening with the nurses as well at the moment. They're complaining, although I haven't done research on it, but I think I was listening to the news the other day where they were saying that there was massive complaint that the female nurses were being paid less than the male nurses. Now, I don't know the details of that, so I can't, but it's, when I heard it, I went, oh, that sounds odd.
Yeah. So one of the things that's funny about that is for the number of times that claim is made, it's almost impossible to find any there'd have to be some kind of evidence that more directly supports that. And occasionally you can find stuff like that in the realm of like modelling or performers or musicians or sex workers or something where you can see strange gaps between genders. But I'd be really interested to see in those, say, nursing roles, are you actually comparing exact like for like? Like are we talking about, I've seen a lot of examples where people say, if we look at this entire hospital, the men are on more than the women, but that's because the roles are not the same. But even when you look at the roles, have those people been in those roles for about the same amount of time? Are they doing the same amounts of overtime, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, and I don't know any of those details. I just definitely, my ears pricked up a bit more given the conversations that we're having at the moment with these podcasts and just going, oh, that seems interesting. I wonder what the details are. But, yeah, I don't know them myself, so.
We also mentioned Uber drivers before, like they are lower paid than any of the people that we've been talking about. And that's because it's a job that's very flexible and has very low entry requirements. And they're also unions. Almost entirely men.
Sorry.
Yeah. Yes. Inga, unions.
Unions tend to have this information because they like to beat up corporates with it and make sure that they resolve it. So that's where I've seen some of this information and they get really granular. So they absolutely pull it down to the kind of information that you're talking about in, and they use tenure in role a lot of times. So, and tenure in the organization as indicators for some of this, as well as, you know, part-time to part-time, full-time to full-time, level in the organization, that kind of like parts of the organization, because obviously all that kind of stuff plays a big impact. So yeah. But it is interesting, and that's how I know, because I've been looking at some of these reports across various industries for a little while, because I've been in gender equity, or what used to be called, you know, women connecting with women, but is now moving towards the gender equity kind of side of things. So I've been in and around some of these conversations for a long time. Well, more so than the other stuff we've talked about. But there are so many factors, but the answers, are you going to lead us to answers? Because I really like your
Of
answers. Let's go.
course. Yeah,
Let's
of course.
follow the path. I
Yeah.
like it.
So I think if there's one like really easy take home from all of that stuff there, it's that one around the difference between women that have kids and women that don't have kids. Like that data just blew my mind to discover that there's no gap there.
I'd love to know more about all the specifics though, in terms of like I was just quickly looking up male nurses and female nurses in New South Wales, and it's 8 days ago, union at loggerheads, blah blah blah, 10.5% pay rise, furious nurses and midwives, yada yada. Now again, they may be broadly sweeping, but the fact that they're striking and so on makes me think that someone's grumpy.
I feel like we're watching market forces at play there again, where like the worth of the job is no longer reflected in what it's getting paid. And I think the same trend you've noticed in teaching, I get the impression, is happening in nursing as well, and that it's quite hard to find nursing staff because they're underpaid at the moment. Those jobs have to go up. They haven't kept pace with inflation and so forth. I guess the really interesting thing there would be is if you can find a trend of data that shows that male nurses with exactly the same skill and all other equal parameters are getting paid less than female nurses. But it's the key there is all the other parameters.
Key findings show that male nurses are being paid around 4% more than their female colleagues 6 months after graduation, yada yada. So there's definitely people saying it, but who, my experience normally is that if you're totally into circles, you can look around a room and see a lot of circles, or if you're totally into triangles, you can look around a room and find a lot of triangles. So.
Okay, so let's jump into underrepresentation of women in the workplace and then get into solutions. We spoke at the start around underrepresentation, and I think the way that's generally described is a sense that I think historically maybe that women were literally kept out of the workforce, which we know was true, and thank God that's changed. There's a bit of a sense when we look around and we see that workplaces have only got sort of, 35 or thereabouts percent females. There's a sense that that workplace is keeping women out. The fun thing about those numbers is that because of the time that women take off having kids or just having a life and having a different work-life balance, there are only actually about 34, 35% of women in the workforce compared to men. So here's a really fun thought for you, which is that if you find a workplace that's got 50% women in it, they've actually pilfered those women from somewhere else. So it's gonna perpetually feel like women are underrepresented in the workplace because they kind of are, but it's no longer because they're being kept out, it's because they're making choices not to be there. Does that make sense?
I would question the word choices, but yes.
Well, is having a kid a choice? How do you mean? What's your
Let me break that down for you. Yes. So there's a few elements I mean when I'm talking about choice. So for like in the broader sense, yes, having a child is a choice. For some people, their ethics and morality lead to a path where that's actually not a choice. And if an accident happens, they don't feel like they have a choice, and therefore they have now have a child and the responsibility. Those people are also more likely to be in traditional roles. So there isn't a, well, I'm the woman, I'm going back to work. It's a, like, you're the woman, you're the primary caregiver. I grew up in a household where my mum was back to work very quickly, but that was because we've always been a, two, probably three income household in the one that I grew up in. Whereas at least one of my parents had at least two jobs. So between them, they were holding down about three jobs. So it was kind of like one of you work at night and hand over the kids to the other one who's working in the daytime and vice versa. So for some people, they can't afford not to have kids, or there's a barrier to if something happens, they have that. And then once they have that, women have a recovery time and stuff, so that hampers them joining, or there's that traditional aspect. So when I say, is it really a choice? That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about some of those societal and internal pressures that if something happens, that isn't a choice, or it's their expectation or whatever. So we still have a lot of, it's the same pressure that puts men as the main breadwinner and doing jobs that they hate, working hours that are not sustainable, and killing themselves, etc. So,
Totally agree with you. When you say it like that, I feel that. I have a sense that neither party has a whole lot of choice in that situation. We all just slip into these default positions, default roles, and it's hilarious. You can so a little bit of this is the grass is greener over there, but I don't mean it in a dismissive way. It's so easy to imagine that stereotypical female role of saying, I want that career, I want that money, I want that security, I want that independence, I want that power. And you can also feel men saying, I want that freedom, I want that family, I want access to my kids, and all that sort of stuff. And there's a lack of choice in the whole system.
The balance is not supported is the problem.
And we're getting more and more choice in general, which is awesome. So my brothers just had they've just had their first baby, and the baby's only, I think he's 6 weeks old now, and she's back at work, and he's staying home with the baby. She's mostly working from home, but she'll go off and work and also sometimes whatever. But yeah, she because her job paid better than his, interestingly. That was
Well,
all.
I love the fact we spoke about this. I forget whether it was last recording or the one before, about all of that, like social pressure and conditioning. You can actually overturn it all with a 5-minute conversation, and in reality, it's going to take much more effort and thinking than that. But it's just a choice. It's just a decision that two people can make as to which way that falls.
That's so many people don't realize they have that ability. I mean, I'm speaking as someone who it was really hard to not have a baby in many ways. I got so much pressure from so many weird areas. And it's probably just because I'm a massively stubborn human that I went, no, that's it. I'm doing it this way. But there were so many times when I felt crushed by it. And I felt, and I got full on, oh, you're not a proper woman, and all sorts of stuff. And I was like, what? And had I been even slightly less sure of myself, that I would have caved, and I would have done things that wouldn't have ended up being great for me. But like, it was a massive fight in a lot of set areas to not do that. And so back, it brings us back to this concept of choice, is that. Sometimes you can't win those fights always. You can't necessarily stave all of that off sometimes.
I am so sorry to you for those pressures.
Thanks.
They are so strong, and
Yeah, and annoying.
I don't know whether it's an exact flip, but I think if it wasn't for me having chronic fatigue and depression, which resulted in me going, I don't want to be a part of that whole corporate business, work myself to death culture, I don't know that I would have been able to resist. So that's my version of I don't know if I hadn't been that stubborn or had such a stubborn force within me, I think I would have fallen down that path, because the pressure to, get a tertiary education and get a career. Because I have nothing that looks like a career. I don't know if it's same and like for like. I'm not saying it's even or equal. Just agreeing with you massively, saying, oh my Lord, there are pressures to play the stereotypes.
So sorry, Emma, go.
I was just going to finish my thought on that, is that, I and you two are in a privileged position where we know about those thoughts, even though, like, make whatever choices we do or don't make or whatever, we know the concept of choosing the path, and some people don't even know that.
I'm going to say the three of us, I suspect, have been feminist as fuck for long enough
That's right.
like easily through our teens to go, gender roles don't mean a damn thing and they shouldn't apply to us and that should be our right. And that's been the source of some of our freedom and stubbornness.
Yeah,
and you're right. I really agree. Not a lot of people have got that degree of commitment and freedom.
No, and no, or even awareness of it being a choice. Maybe I could make a different choice. Like some that's not there for a lot of people. So, and it's not because, you know, I'm better or anything else. It's just a matter of access to lifestyle, to social groups, to all sorts of things that's not been available to them. So, yeah.
Yeah, Inga?
I attribute my stubbornness to my mother. And she was always a very strong, I will do what I want kind of woman, which meant that I had the fight about I'm not having children around when I got married at 18, very, very strongly, to the point where, you know, over that 2 or 3 year period, everybody was very sure I was never going to have children. And so it didn't really come up after that. But funnily enough, I've totally got sucked into the corporate lifestyle of working too hard and still working too hard and trying to find balance. So I've flipped from, well, if you're not going to be a woman, then be a very good man. And that's funnily enough what's kind of played out. So, and that's, you know, played out in some of my relationships as well, where I'm, you know, I don't cook. My partner does. I bring in more money and all of that kind of stuff. So that's like, I've gone, all right, well, if I'm not that stereotype, I should be that stereotype quite successfully. So just that's kind of just a little funny by the by.
Weird. Awesome. So solutions and ways forward. So with regards to underrepresentation of women in the workforce and also more broadly, you know, public politics, public voice, et cetera, I personally am in favour of quotas. I'm so passionately committed to that. I'm actually potentially in favour of quotas, although that does put me on the very fringe of feminism, but I am what I am. I think they're crude, but this is a really important issue. But the problem that I think no one really thinks about is just the maths of where are you going to stick the men and where are you going to get the women from to fill quotas? I think the only solution to that is that you have to have two-way quotas. You have to have quotas to get men into the family and into community life and out of the workforce, rather than just leaving this stubborn situation that creates more and more pressure. So two-way quotas, but let's face it, there's no chance that's ever going to get up. Funnily enough, a variant of that was tried, people that are not in Australia might not remember one of our prime ministers, John Howard, and I don't remember a great deal about John Howard, and I'm certainly not pretending to be an advocate or a fan. I literally don't know enough to track that. But I know that one of the campaigns that he championed was to change the default settings for a divorce or separation arrangement that used to be the default assumption that the kids would go with her, to saying by default it should be 50-50 time split. So that makes him one of the most radical feminists that has ever been in the legislative arena. But do you think that's the way that that decision was portrayed? So the tricky thing, and I get it, I understand why. Obviously, that was portrayed as a taking away women's rights and women's choice. But ironically, it would have been one of the most impressive things that could have been done to fix the wage gap and to fix underrepresentation in the workforce. So I just think that's hilarious. Outside of that, obviously, I'm a big fan that, as we've been discussing, that equal parenting would just go such a long way towards addressing the wage gap. In fact, it wouldn't go such a long way. It would solve the wage gap. So, yeah, couples need to make that decision and realise that they can make that decision. They need to be as punk as we are. And we collectively as a culture need to make it possible. We need equal parenting leave, with encouragement for men to take it. So that example you gave, Emma, of someone that you was related to you, is pretty rare. So the current status in Australia is the couple can have 20 weeks and each of them has to have at least 2 of those weeks. And so what happens in most cases is he takes sort of 2 to 4 weeks, somewhere in that figure, and she takes the rest of those weeks. Mm. I would suggest that needs to be made much, well, for one thing, longer, just for the benefit of family, the benefit of the kids, and a whole bunch of other reasons. And as a non-kid, it's really funny to listen to myself advocating for this, but that's how much I care about this issue. But yeah, I think there needs to be more of an expectation or an assumption of equality built into that system, and an encouragement for people to really think, like, you know, you can't really share the load of who's going to give birth for the time being, but more encouragement to decide what happens after that.
Yeah, and if it was longer, it would allow for women to recover from the really, you know, sometimes quite severe physical impact of giving birth, recover enough that they can actually then go back to work and then hand over if, you know, do something like that. You can't do that if there's only 20 weeks in total and it takes you 15 weeks to recover.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Which is why what tends to happen is, yeah, she stays home for longer, he goes harder at work to compensate for the loss of income. And yeah. So I think if that's going to work out, then we need to, in the same way we're not there yet, but in the same way we're working on liberating the workplace so that it's more accessible to women. So, you know, getting the amount of sexual assault in the workplace down, getting the amount of sexism in the workplace down, making them more accessible spaces. I think we need to do the same thing in the family environment, which is going to look like having male type people much more involved in that entire process, right back from the decision itself, even though I hear what you say about there's not much choice in it from one perspective. From another perspective, she's got more say in whether you have kids than he does. So he needs to be involved right back at that level. The whole thing around pregnancy and preparation, I don't know if you have, as a male type person, gone along to any of those like pre-birthing classes. My God, you feel like a freak. It is such uncomfortable territory. So that whole world needs to be cracked open. The birthing process itself, it should be a they-centric process. Obviously, it's got to be a she-centric process, but it needs to be more they-centric. And then, yeah, taking over the parenting role, or at least sharing in it as soon as possible. And again, if you've ever tried to go to a mum and bubs class as a person with a dick, otherwise, in the same way that we have a glass ceiling stopping women from escalating into positions of seniority in workplaces, which historically has been actually written into law, it's been almost impossible. Now I think there's all those other reasons we spoke about. It's at least partially cultural or self-imposed, or as well as externally opposed. We also have effectively a glass front door stopping men from getting into the house, getting into the family, and we need to pull that down.
It shows in different ways, like schools, kinders contact women, you know, mums, not dads.
Yeah.
Even just, it's very, doctors.
Yeah.
You know, all those kind of things are quite pervasively.
Yeah.
Would default to calling a mum rather than a dad if something's wrong or needs to be organised or whatever.
Yeah. And for me, like it goes so deep. The very few times that I've been in one of those positions where I've had to like pick up a kid or something like that, the sense of everyone is looking at me like I'm a pedophile is horrific. Like, to say that they're unwelcoming spaces is amazing understatement. And yeah, again, as a non-parent myself, it's really funny to hear myself saying this, but childcare, I get it. It's really, really, really important. And it needs to be cheaper. It's so important for getting women back in the workplace. And I'm sorry for all the times in my past decades that I haven't understood the importance of that. I get it now. And yeah, family-friendly workplaces, policies and managers. There's a side benefit to this whole process of, if we can manage to achieve effectively a two-way quota kind of a situation, not only do we get rid of the wage gap, but there's also some incredible benefits from getting men into families. Obviously, it's going to go a long way towards addressing some of that toxic masculinity stuff that we spoke about earlier. So rather than men seeing themselves as just wage-earning machines to, you know, slave against their body, they're going to be developing those nurturing, communicative, relationship, family skills that have been the unpaid emotional labour of the women's domain for so long. There's also incredible benefits for the kids in that in a situation where, we've got to qualify this for single parent and same-sex relationships in a second. I'll circle around to that. So we're still in the gross generalisations of heterosexual situations. It looks like do your own research, but it looks like when the father is mostly absent, girls tend to suffer a little bit in terms of their trust in men, but boys tend to suffer a huge amount in terms of losing positive role models and losing that connection. I wish that kids didn't have any reference to gender, but I can't do much about that. It looks like they do, and it looks like it has a really negative impact on boys. So unfortunately at the moment, with the loss of the father figure and separation, one of the knock-on effects of that is that we are creating the next generation of problems as well. Now let me address the non-hetero part of that. Much stronger than any of this data is that if you're acting with intention around your approach to parenting, that trumps all of the trends that I've just been talking around impacts on girls and boys. So a lesbian or a gay male couple that are intentionally doing what they're doing, which you sort of have to do if you're in that situation, because you've got to be willing to take a big stand against the system and say, we're doing this. So there's a lot of intentionality built into that. And likewise, single parents done with intention can overrule all of those trends. So in summary and conclusion, if you use the lens, Emma, you spoke about looking for triangles, looking for circles, looking for squares. If you use the lens, if you're looking at the world through the lens of men are the victors and women are the victims, then it's very easy to reach the conclusion that the patriarchy is keeping women out of the workplace and then undervaluing them when they are let in. I think that was the case and in some ways still is. But these days, it looks like a huge part of that maths is kids. We seem to be in a situation where, we can't have it both ways. You can't have kids and career, but maybe we can. Maybe if both parties have it both ways, if both parties are opting for kids and career, then both parties can have kids and career. That actually checks out. That maths out. And it's not that massive to change. Like I say, on an individual level, it's just a conversation breaking free of your stereotypical roles. It's parental leave, it's childcare, and just, not making the assumptions that you're going to stick with standard gender roles. Ta-da!
You know what would actually solve more problems?
What?
Is if we kicked capitalism a bit in the nuts and said...
Can we say gonads rather than nuts?
We can absolutely say gonads, or I can actually say
it's more
just
inclusive.
Kick it to the curb. Oh, just kick them to the curb, kick capitalism to the curb, and say actually we'd both like to equally participate at equal levels in the workforce and with our children. We don't want a primary caregiver. We want both to be caregivers, and we both want to get fulfillment out of working and bringing income in.
I that love would that actually so much.
Fix way more problems.
I love that so much.
Have both people work 0.75 instead of one person work one and one person work half, because it's still the same, and you get much more fulfillment.
On both sides, it solves everything simultaneously. It's not just about getting women paid more equally and represented. It solves all of the problems.
Yep. On a few levels.
Great. Well, that's most of what I wanted to say about that. It's an intense topic because even a couple of times in that topic, it was really great getting your input because it made me go, there's a couple of spots where I've done that thing, where I've gone down a particular path and I probably have been looking for evidence of triangles and not noticing squares. I mean, I think I like the generality of what I said. I like the general thrust of that. I think there's a lot of truth in that, but there's some details that are not going to stack up. And this is a really contentious topic. And I don't know. I'm just acknowledging that.
Okay, so there's two comments I'd like to make by the way of sort of balancing comments or
lines of thought. The first one is around the question of where the pay gap comes from, and I think that that would benefit from a bit of a summary. So we agree that there is a pay gap and also a representation gap. Women are underrepresented in the workforce and they are paid less than men overall. The question is, what's causing those things? And it matters, in my opinion, a lot, because it influences how we go about solving the problem. One way of looking at it, and the most commonly reported one, let's call it the mainstream one, tells us something along the lines that women's work is valued less, and women face structural disadvantages in getting higher paid roles, and women are paid 17% less for the same work. So when that's the model under which we're thinking, then people tend to assume that someone somewhere, probably the patriarchy, is sort of almost meeting and intentionally devaluing women's work or something along those lines. People tend to think about how women are overlooked for employment or overlooked for higher paid roles just because of sexism. People tend to think that people and men in particular just hate women and so pay them less for the same work. People tend to think that lower wages and the underrepresentation of women is just an obvious outcome of a world that hates women. And understandably, when that's our model of thinking, it all leads to a lot of rage and anger, which is fair enough, because if that was the case, I too would be feeling a lot of rage and anger about that. But it also leads us to very little in the way of actual tangible outcomes, because all we can really do is gesture at the sky and say, please stop being so sexist. And I mean, there's a little bit more to it than that, but it's a bit of it's another case of impotent rage. The second way of looking at this, and the one that I've been exploring in this episode, sort of sounds a little bit more like saying something like, when women do the majority of parenting, either through choice to do so or a lack of choice not to do so, their career and their finances suffer greatly. So this doesn't have quite as much rage and anger as the other standard mainstream line, because we can sort of see that there are both pluses and minuses to this, in that whether you lean more towards family or more towards career, both of them have benefits and playoffs. It's a more complicated situation. And I think with this scenario, it also shows us, at least potentially, that men and women are united in wanting to fix this problem, in that women will benefit from more access to career and men will benefit from more access to family and community. This all ties back to the second episode on privilege and so forth. That's going to do a lot to address the various privileges that we do and don't have. Also, there are, when we look at things this way, that this line of thinking leads us very directly to things we can do to fix the problem. So a huge part of that, as we've been exploring, is around getting heterosexual couples to decide who's doing what, and maybe even put some quotas in place, if you're like me, to encourage change. But these quotas would have to be in both directions. So it's not enough just to try and get more women into the workplace. You've got to actually get men out of the workplace and into family and community roles at exactly the same rate. Otherwise, you've just got a logjam. Two-way quotas, parental leave and making sure that all parties take that parental leave, affordable childcare. And also throw in this one, we need to stop referring to bad jokes as dad jokes, and also stop the whole culture that goes along with that. Because every time we do that, we make it a little bit harder for men to get out of the workplace and into the family. And in turn, that makes it harder for women to get out of the family and into the workplace. So when we refer to bad jokes as dad jokes, that's a little contribution to making sure that the pay gap remains in place. If it turns out that the second way of looking things is true, that it's due to the playoff between being the majority parent and career,
then at the moment we're just sort of spinning our wheels with all of that rage and anger, and we stand no chance of solving the actual problem because we're not addressing that problem. We're addressing something else. We should be focusing on who does the parenting because whoever gets the benefit of parenting is going to miss out on the benefits of career and vice versa. I love Inga's suggestion of aiming to share those things at about the rate of 0.75 of a full-time job each in the case of two-parent heterosexual family situations. The second balancing comment or line of thought for today relates to some things around nursing and teaching data. Emma brought up a couple of cool points, which I didn't really have time to think through or respond to in the moment. One was that she found some research showing that even, not just within the same hospital, but even within the same ward, male nurses were paid more. So I've had some time to do some research on that, and I don't know for sure that I found exactly the same research Emma was looking at, but I did find a few bits of research that pointed in the same direction, and they're really great cases in point. So yeah, male nurses are paid for, but it's not for exactly the same job. Nurses and teachers, for that matter, are paid according to the award. And now I don't know what this is called in other countries, so apologies to overseas listeners. But the award system in Australia specifies what level of responsibility you have to work out sort of, you know, what grade of employment you're in, and then how many years you've been in the role, and pays you more, you know, upgraded every couple of years or so. So it specifies how much each tier can be paid. And particularly in the case of a lot of government jobs, such as nursing and teaching, you cannot pay over that rate. So it's very measurable and very repeatable. I mean, it's deliberately designed to be that way so that it's really easy and fair to assess a whole every person within the workplace. And so circling back to how we talk about these issues, it's not fair to talk about someone who's been in a lower responsibility role for a shorter period of time and then compare them to someone that's in a higher position, higher responsibility role for a longer period of time. They are just simply not the same role, and it's a little offensive to say that they are. But when we see headlines that say something like, even in the same hospital or on the same ward, male nurses are paid more, we are effectively saying, well, that's the same role. It is vanishingly impossible to find actual examples of women being paid less for exactly the same work. There are some exceptions relating to CEO positions, performers like actors, singers, and so forth, and influencers. You can definitely find exceptions, but they feel like they're in a very small, less than 1% extreme end of the scale. It is vanishingly impossible to find examples of women being paid less for exactly the same work, certainly in the developed Western world. The other thing was that Emma also spoke about how it's hard to find teachers at the moment, and that comment was in the context of me proposing that it's market forces of supply and demand that effectively set the rates for jobs. So if you've got more people applying for a particular job, then over the course of time, the rate of pay for that job will go down. But if you've got fewer people applying for that job, over the course of time, the rate of pay is going to have to go up. And I think that what Emma was talking about is what it feels like when those market forces are out of balance. And if it is persistently hard to find teachers at the moment, which wouldn't surprise me at all coming out of COVID, it's because either too many have left or not enough are being attracted to the role because the work doesn't justify the wage anymore. And Emma spoke well about how intense and stressful that is. I think what it is to be a teacher has probably changed a lot in the last 20, 40 years. And literally the only solution to that over time is to increase wages or to make the work easier. And I reckon that one or both of those things will have to be happening now. No amount of having an employer say to you, we think you should do this for less, is going to solve the problem in the long term. Might provide some short-term buffer, but in the long term, you just have to increase those wages. That's the, quote, beauty, unquote, of the open market and market forces. Thanks for listening, gang.